Sonny Rollins and the Sonny Rollins Quartet with Strode Road. This was recorded in 1956 and is from the album Saxophone Colossus. Sonny Rollins, of course, is on tenor sax, Tommy Flanagan on piano, Doug Watkins on bass, and Max Roach on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And get ready to do some driving, because it's Free Your Mind Friday, and you're in charge. You take the conversation where you want it to go. I'm only asking that, really, you should have a strong opinion by the time you call up. Okay? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. So let's get started right away. By the way, I just want to say this. Yes, very important. Monday is a holiday for PRN, and so you will be hearing a repeat program on Monday. Monday is also the day that the storm, if it ever changes its mind — it would be a great idea if it could change its mind — but it's expected to make landfall on Monday going into Tuesday. I have no idea what that would mean. I'm always skittish when you have these storm warnings. This is being reported on as a probable Category 4 storm, and it's coming right in a neighborhood near me. And when that happens, the lights go out, there's flooding, there's mayhem. And so we're watching to see how things go. All right, so just keep that in mind. Jay, you're on the air. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Yes, I've been a little busy. How have you been, Eutrice? Are you doing good? I've been listening, and I heard you had, pinched nerve or something like that.
My gosh, I'm telling you, there is no pain like it, but I had it, and it's still here with me, keeping me company.
Well, I hope you better. I'll get right to it. Number one, in regards to the things that's going on with this president, it seems to me that he's becoming more and more mentally unstable. I mean, I'm having a great deal of issues basically with the narrative of some of the things that he's doing being played out in the media, and how they're really not talking about it, and how they're making semi-excuses for him. I'll give you a perfect example. This whole tariff situation with China. I think that this tariff situation with China is much of a bigger deal than what they're making it out to be. I think that it's going to cause problems for years to come. I think that markets are being lost that people are not really talking about and discussing. Because, listen, China is like this. You don't want to sell us your product, we'll go someplace else and get the product, which they've shown and which they've done. And whereby we in this country are not developing new markets. You know what I mean? And, I mean, it's just not being spoken and articulated on the level that it should be for people to understand it. You know, you have people in certain farming states that are saying things and speaking out a little bit about it, but they're not really telling the true story about how a lot of these farmers are not getting the so-called bailout money that they deserve and they should get, that the 1% farmers are the ones who's getting the money, and those that are below them are not receiving what is due, and that the loss of land through bankruptcy and others is much bigger than it's being reported. And this is something that's going to affect people like me and you months ahead. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're paying $129 now for a tomato. In another 3 or 4 months, you're going to pay $139, $149 a pound for a tomato. all of these things add up. And it's because of the unstable abilities and madness of this president and the Congress and the Senate not doing their job to critique and address the things that he's doing. The Congress has the right to put an end to these terrors. Why aren't they doing it? Why aren't they challenging them? You know what I mean?
Because these tariffs and the situations like that are not merely just agriculture. Agriculture has been tied to politics in a way we haven't seen in decades. Deals are struck, and ostensibly they are marketed as an agricultural arrangement. You know, country A sells its products to country B. That's not what has been happening for decades now. These agreements have become so political on both sides, very, very political, and they are enmeshed and linked to all kinds of political issues, again, on both sides. But of course, the United States takes the cake here. And what has been happening lately is that the farming community has realized that they are getting royally screwed. Their version of what should be a trade agreement is not turning out to be that at all. Trump has found a way to tie just about every so-called deal that he makes to some political or military or other advantage. So it complicates things. It no longer is an agricultural exchange. It no longer is a two-sided arrangement. Not at all. And we see this more and more. So the farming community, the agricultural community in the United States has become very much aware of that. And they object to it now. And they believe now more and more that they'd been hoodwinked by this president. You there? Oh, he hung up. Okay, 888-874-4888. Everything that this administration has done, and it's not unique to this administration, but perhaps the degree to which this administration functions in that way far exceeds what any other administration, it seems, has done or attempted to do. And so it has created bad blood here at home. It has created bad blood abroad with our so-called trading partners. They don't want to do business with us. They have no desire to continue this charade that what they are involved with with the United States is a deal. It's not working out that way. It hasn't been working out that way for a long time. And Trump has pushed this thinking to the absolute limit and to the point where the trading partners are fed up because it's like a stick-up. That is not a way you do business, where your trading partner is disgusted and fed up and feels robbed and feels, you know, that whenever Trump shows up, it is about what he's going to steal, not whether he's going to strike a deal, but what he's going to steal, what he's going to try to get away with. And how he's going to just get water from a rock, even, and then go ahead and boast about it, about how dumb these people are to let me get away with this much. But they've come to the realization the United States, in the representation of Donald Trump, is not a good trading partner. It has no honor. It has not been dealing with honor and above board, you know, it has some other ulterior motive that at the time they're negotiating these deals, these things are not known and not seen. But certainly, sooner or later, they'll pop up, and then it becomes the blame game on the part of Trump, and he just continues. He doesn't pay attention to the awful reputation he has incurred for this nation. Very sad. Hello, Gene from Maryland. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and happy Friday and long weekend to you. I hope you're ready to batten down the hatches for this storm that's heading your way.
I'm telling you, every report I read is increasingly more disappointing. You know, it's like, get in your boat now, get in your plane, get into whatever it is, and get out of here.
Right, leave. So, Utrice, you had a pretty tremendous week on the broadcast this week, and, you know, you brought up a range of very interesting topics. So it's Friday, and I think I'll take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I know you enjoy is a look at the history. And so you were talking about Jeffrey Epstein, and there were a couple of callers who were pointing out some conspiratorial angles, and you didn't agree with them, and I understand why, but I wanted to point something out. I live in Maryland now, but I used to be from New Jersey, and I lived in Teaneck, New Jersey, and there was a police murder of a young man named Philip Pinnell. I'm sure you remember that case.
Yes.
Now, I actually knew Philip, and my sister graduated high school with the police officer, Gary Spath, who shot him. Now, long story short, as that case developed, it hinged on whether or not the police officer shot Philip Pinnell in the back or not. The Bergen County coroner, was delaying and delaying and delaying bringing his report out. Ultimately, the report came out. It was very clear that something screwy was going on. And when the report came out, it said Philip Pinnell had been shot in the back. Now, the family went and got their own autopsy done, which gave a different conclusion. And I bring this up to say that coroner issued his report on a Thursday, and on Friday, he retired, packed off and moved to Florida, and was never heard from again. And I say that to say, if we're waiting to find out what happened with Jeffrey Epstein, how he died, what circumstances he died under, waiting for that report, I understand the official nature and why we need to do that, but there are very screwy things that happen under official capacity. And I really wanted to make that clear.
Well, you did. But is that the story?
I'm not following you.
When you think of Jeffrey Epstein, of course, we know that he is deceased. They're calling it a suicide. Do we know that to be true?
Well, we know that they're calling it that. But is that exactly what happened?
Okay.
We don't know. And I think to a larger point, we can't know because they're not forthcoming with truthful information, and they have a habit of not being forthcoming with truthful information. So this brings me to my second comment. You were asking on Wednesday, I believe, or maybe it was Tuesday, what is the real story here? And you were pointing out that what we're being given is all of this titillation about sex with children and all this kind of stuff. And that's true, but that's not the real story.
No, it's not.
What I believe the real story is the fact that this is yet another example of how the government has turned loose these monsters on the public, and how the public continues to bear the scars and the bruises from government action. Mr. Acosta was the state's attorney who was in charge of the Epstein investigation, and Mr. Acosta was the one who decided and made the decision and signed the paper to not pursue appropriate charges.
Oh, well, you know, this case has a long way to go. We're probably going to be 3 or 4 years before this case reaches a point of critical mass. We haven't begun to know what really was happening in, you know, in this case with Jeffrey Epstein. But here's the thing to keep in mind and look out for it, because it hasn't appeared yet. And then you'll know that they're getting close to something. They can't tell us exactly what it is, but it will take a long time, because Jeffrey Epstein's story is a story of the new global order. How politics and wealth basically are conjoined in this process of owning and running the world. Has nothing to do with who is elected, who is seeking office. They have their own world. The man had an office in the Caribbean. Nobody could touch him there. And even the Prince of England would go there. You don't know, and I don't know, what business was being transacted. We told, you know, it involved sex, and it involved crazy sex with young girls and young men. Okay. But that's what they tell us, because this is a big draw away from the central story. The questions need to be answered, but first they need to be asked. Where did he come from? Where did this guy, Jeffrey Epstein, come from? How is it that he was able to operate at the highest level of Wall Street, in that community, in the United States government? How does this happen and nobody knows anything? Nobody seems it never did occur to anybody to ask these questions. Who is this guy? How is it that he has all these people floating in and out of his life, and he's choreographing all kinds of things that will make a lot of money for a lot of people? He's also stealing hundreds and millions of dollars from his so-called clients, never sees a day in jail, never loses his accreditation. How did he get accreditation? These are the kinds of questions you need to ask. We need to get the answers to these questions. Jeffrey Epstein is not the first, and he won't be the last. We have had presidents, for crying out loud, living rather sordid lives. Bill Clinton, just to name one, okay? And the same thing there. But this Jeffrey Epstein guy was all over the world doing the same thing, completely unscathed. How does that happen? Now, that's the story. Let's stop the sexual habits and his perversions and whatever it is. We've been through that before. It's nothing new. But what is new here is that this man was a one-man government, global government. And he got away with it. We still don't know whether he killed himself or whether he was assisted out of this world. And frankly, it's the second, it is secondary to the first question. Who was he? Who was he connected to? He was connected to all kinds of people looking to make money all over the world. And he figured out a formula that would get them hooked. And they are, like the Prince Edward, he is totally at Epstein's mercy. You know what it is? If Epstein let loose 1/10 of the dossier that he had or has on Prince Andrew or Prince Edward, what would happen to the royal crown? That was a fabulous tool for extortion. He committed an extraordinary series of crimes, got away with it for years. That's the story. His proclivities, they're no different from the proclivities that we have heard about at the highest levels of government in the United States and abroad. We've been there and we've done that. The real question is about money, power, extortion, and perhaps even a murder or two. People who disappeared, and we know nothing about that. Are you there, Jean? Okay. Well, he hung up too. Okay. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello.
I think it might be helpful for some of the listeners to look on their computer for the site floodiq.com, I believe, and it might have some very important information about this close-by hurricane and their risk assessment for whatever their residence is. I believe it's floodiq.com. That's the first thing I want to talk about.
Thank you.
I think that's important for some people to look that up. What's on my mind now is what has been talked about to some degree in the past few days, so-called quote-unquote education. And from a viewpoint that is seldom heard anywhere in the media. And what I'm thinking about is what's going on is the people who rule under this system that we have in the USA have in mind, those in power, the education, the public so-called education system is a fantastic opportunity to make money. So what I believe, my opinion is they would like to destroy public education and privatize the whole thing for profit. So they have done everything they could to make this happen. The introduction of these private schools, charter schools, and getting the legislative branch to pay for these schools with public funds and to essentially let private operators run them. That's the introduction. Also, the idea of vouchers rather than having public schools. So really, what we have is a war against the possibility of continuing public schools, but rather turning them to private schools for private profit. So basically, teachers are under the fantastic attack. They have often talked about so-called bad schools, which I'd say means to most people bad teachers. They have got a tremendous need to scapegoat the teachers, destroy any organization they have, to be able to privatize schools. And I think it's important for people to understand this. This is about money. They have already won at the college level. Most of the colleges, the majority of the professors in college are adjuncts now at essentially a little above minimum wage, and they've won there. Maybe as much as 70% or so of the professors are adjuncts. They have done everything they could to make this happen. You don't need many associates, assistant professors. You maybe need just one or two full professors, and the rest you can have fill-ins by adjunct people. With teachers, it's working out very successfully for them. They have done lots of things to get rid of black teachers. Look at Chicago, where they closed down all these schools, and I'm sure that impacted very heavily on black teachers. They've done things to destroy job security or tenure. They have done everything they could to replace teachers with police in schools, with the proliferation of administrators to ride herd on teachers, with doing all kinds of things like massive loads for teachers, making life so hard for teachers. There are many teachers who work 7 or 8 hours a day in a school, then had to spend numerous hours at home preparing so-called lesson plans at home for their students. And, you know, the pay of teachers generally is not that good. And the goal of this ruling class is mostly in effect already in colleges, in the primary and secondary grades. The same thing is going on in New York State here. They have attacked teachers and made it difficult for teachers to achieve tenure in their jobs. In New York City, they've made it so difficult that what is happening is that teachers by the hundreds are not giving tenure at the time they should get tenure. They're making it very difficult. And so, you know, people have to understand the game that is going on with the so-called education system, and which I have always told myself, after looking at it, is a training system and not education, which education really means empowerment of people, and that's the last thing they want to do. The other thing I want to talk about relating to this is that when you talk about students and students having difficulty in school, no one talks about those problems that the student brings to school when he or she comes to school. It's easy to have a scapegoat like the teacher, there's something wrong with the teacher, but no one talks about those students who come from the bottom of the, from families at the bottom of the wage scale, or out of poverty, who come from families with unemployment or underemployment. Those students have serious health issues. Those students have all kinds of problems, like family responsibilities that they have to take care of, that have attendance and lateness problems, who come from disoriented families and have no place to do their schoolwork, or homeless, who have safety issues in their neighborhoods. And, you know, there's a multiplicity of problems that people come to schools with. They don't understand that those in the ruling class, their children don't go to schools like that. They go to schools where the all the facilities in place, the classes are small, maybe sometimes 10 or 12 students. They have everything available to them. Some of them have a tutor for every subject they have. There have been reports, for example, in the New York Times, where one woman in a, with a child in elite school paid the tuition, but her cost for the tutor for the children in the school was more than the tuition in the school. So this is what I think is important for people to know. So the idea of scapegoating teachers and calling them just bad schools because of bad teachers, there's a big hole in that argument.
Absolutely. What if you were to say a thing or two about possible ways of recasting these things so that people could understand better ways in which they can contribute to a solution? What would those two things be?
All right. The solution, from my perspective, is to have as good a school as the ones that the ruling class people sent their children to. The other thing, the main solution, is that we need to live in a society where there's a living wage for all families, and where there's no homelessness, there's no situation where children have to live in poverty. And if those things are straightened out, things will come together. When you are suffering every day for a variety of reasons, you can't concentrate well in school. You have all kinds of problems.
And but the way things are going now, it's working just fine. Working great. We have the famous school-to-prison pipeline. You have the incarceration of young people. So these things are working very, very well.
Yeah, well, that's working well for the ruling class. But
yes.
The point is that, you know, the thing that I'm saying about this is that we want to defeat that. And we can't defeat that by just reflexively going in and voting for one of the two divisions of the same party. You know, in the case of many people at the bottom, they're going out and voting for the Democrats, and the Democrats are down with the ruling class to do the goal that I mentioned before. The point is that people have to do something different. I mean, the interests of the people and interests of those who rule is not the same. And, you know, people have to get it. So don't fall for the okey-doke, which is blaming so-called bad teachers. And that's always mentioned, and no one mentions what the real goal is, to enrich those at the top, take over the schools, and blame the students, and get the pipeline going well to the prisons, so to enrich those who benefit from the prisons. So I would say that we've got to kind of educate ourselves, because you can't expect the fox to educate the chickens. He's not going to do it. Or let's say from Jamaica, the mongoose is not going to tell the chickens what to do.
Well, thank you very much, David, for your contribution today. 888-874-4888. This is your forum. Use it as well as you can to contribute to a whole new library that we need to give us new references about things that are happening in our lives that we very well can get involved in and turn around. But we have to have a plan. We have to have information. We have to have knowledge. And it comes from all of us. 888-874-4888. It is important that people be heard. I think that that's a big deal. And I've always been about that in radio. We're not asked. I was asked at a town meeting. In fact, it was in New York City. Why do we have people talking on the air who don't seem to know what they're talking about? I said, well, you're going to have to deal with that for a while. But here, consider this. How many of those people that you're hearing have been heard at all about anything, have been asked about anything, let alone heard about anything? It's a very small number, because the decision has been made. The people's voices don't matter much. They don't matter. In some cases, they don't matter at all. And that's why I insist we have to start talking. Eve from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Patrice.
Hello.
Are you gonna stay for the hurricane down here?
Yeah, I have no choice. I'll stay right here.
Oh, I'm not as brave as you. I'm chickening out this time, and I'm going to Atlanta to my daughter's house.
Good for you.
I've not
left because of any hurricane. And oddly enough, I'm close to the water, which raises a very important question about my sanity. You just do the best you can. In terms of any disaster or would-be disaster, you just do the best you can, and you play like crazy that it doesn't happen to you.
Right. Well, I'm pretty close to the water too. You know, Edgewater over here is not too far from the New Smyrna Beach and the beaches over here, but Irma, last time when Hurricane Irma, it was like 10 hours of terrorizing me, and I just can't take another one. I just can't take it. You know,
it really is scary. It sounds like a train coming at you, and it's right outside.
Exactly like a train is going for 10 hours straight right through your living room.
Yeah,
My neighbor had 3 trees fall on her house. Luckily, they didn't go through the roof, but I mean, that's how close it was. That it's just too terrorizing, and it's so upsetting, and just takes you. You know, it disrupts everything in your life.
Yeah, it does. It does. When it goes wrong, it can go very, very wrong. So,
well, I'm keeping my
fingers crossed.
The best
thing you can do is be logical, and do what you can to assure your safety. Nothing will be perfect, but you do your best to feel reasonably safe. And if it requires you getting out of Dodge, do that too. Just get out.
Right. I don't know if you recall from maybe a year and a half ago, I gave 3 helpful hints for a hurricane, for people that live down here, when the power goes out, to put the bottles of spring water in the freezer and let them freeze up. If you put 5 or 6 in there, they'll stay cold for like 5 or 6 days. And then you can put all your stuff from the right side into the freezer part. And also with the solar lights, I was able to buy some decent solar lights. They were $25 a piece at Walmart. And they're working out pretty good. Most people keep them outside, but if theoretically you could bring them inside and you don't have to use electric, you know, you could just use the solar lights in each room. And then the wind-up solar radio is another very important thing. Those 3 things helped me out, you know, for the 3 hurricanes that I sat through down here. But I don't think I'm going to have to use them this time. Anyway, I don't know if you remembered that. I had mentioned that before, to try to help people, and I hope they took my advice on that.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned it. I'm sure it might have been helpful to somebody. And again, it would not have happened if you didn't have access to the airwaves to talk to us, and they had the wherewithal to hear your voice and take your advice.
Now, was your show on list today, or was it a repeat?
It was a repeat. I wasn't able to broadcast from here yesterday because we didn't know what was happening. And then it was clear the governor declared a state of emergency, and that put a bunch of other things into play. I had sent my program in very early that morning because I had every intention, of course, that we'd be on the air. But things developed locally in such a way that we had to be ready at any time to leave whatever it is we were doing and go do something else related to being safe. So the governor did declare a state of emergency. And I live in a little town. When you live in a little town, you see up close how people deal with a state of emergency. As it turned out, it wasn't an immediate state of emergency, but it was a preparation that he said that we ought to make, to start making, because the forecast was not looking good at all. And people did heed. People did take the governor's word for it. Because when I went out looking for, you know, a few things, every place was crowded, absolutely crowded. And people were beginning to, you could sense a sense of panic, because the way they were describing this hurricane, this burgeoning hurricane, it sounded like you don't want to play with this one. You want to take it seriously, and you want to do everything in your power to be prepared. So, no, I didn't do a live program, although I was prepared to do a live program, but the way things were developing locally, I decided it made sense to just be safe.
Yeah, I went to the gas station yesterday, and it was like Panic City over there. They had to put the signs on the pumps that there was no more gas, And now I'm hearing that 32% of the gas stations are out of gas down here. But according to my cousin, the trucks are always rolling and they're always coming to bring more gas. So hopefully there'll be gas for people. I got my tank filled up, and I always keep at least 10 gallons of water on in my cupboard down there all year round. I don't even wait when it's a hurricane time. This way I don't have to worry. I have it already. So I always buy 3 or 4 when I go shopping, you know, when it's not hurricane season. And I always have a few in there already ahead of time. But
I went to 3 different stores, and they were out of water yesterday.
No water.
So it's a little thing, but it's a big thing, you know, and it becomes even bigger when it counts. You know, you're looking for to take care of certain things that you have water, you have the necessities, and then you get to the stores and it's not there. So, but we'll survive. We'll take care of ourselves, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will. I just wanted to make a comment on Jay's first call. He talked about the tariffs with China.
Yes.
Now, there's rich people in China, too, not just the United States, and there's rich people in every country in the world. And if we're so corrupt, why aren't all these other countries could be just as corrupt as our administration is, and they could all be in it together, just making it look like there's some that we're putting a tariff on them, so that makes the people suffer. The people end up suffering, and we constantly have this thought that we can change something by voting. And why do we believe that they even bother counting the votes? Is a mystery to me. That because for 60 years I've been on this planet, I've never seen anybody good get voted in. But we constantly keep thinking that the vote is going to be able to change things. I'm just mystified by it.
So if the vote is not capable of producing that kind of change, what do you think will work?
Well, I think it, you have to take things into your own hands. Stop thinking about the government's going to help us. We got to find a way, find a place. You know, do the things you have to do that you know are going to be helpful to you, and not always think that somebody is going to come along and take you by the hand and show you this and that. You have to, like, be inventive, and you have to do things yourself, because we constantly do this. We're just going to vote out the bad ones, and we're going to vote in the good ones, and that's just not never working. And
no, it doesn't seem to work.
Someday there's going to be stormtroopers coming to our door, and they're going to knock on the door, and you open it up, and they say, "You got 5 minutes to fill up a garbage bag with your most valuable stuff, and then get on that bus out there." And you'll call the police, and no one will answer. There'll be no police to help us out. They'll only be helping the rich people out. And you'll put on your electric and it won't go on. I mean, these things might not happen for a while, but I see them clearly now. And it makes me feel very uneasy. And I worry about people because we're all in this together and we have to help each other. So it bothers me when people call in and say, "Oh, we got to vote out this one, and we're going to vote in somebody good." We're constantly stuck in this thing, this thought that we could do something by voting. I think to just let us go vote, just so we can blame ourselves for voting in the wrong people. And nothing's really going to be gained by this political system. You know, they're out for themselves, like David from Brooklyn says, and they're not really helping us out. And soon it's going to get much worse, because as technology is helping them with robots and stuff, they don't need us as much. So we're expendable. And when it gets to be that point, then it's really dangerous.
It is already dangerous. And, you know, people have all kinds of burdens that they're bearing, including psychological burdens. It shouldn't be the case that on top of all the things that you worry about on a daily basis, you also worry about the legitimacy of the government. Can the government do what is needed to be done? Does it have the wherewithal? Does it have the will even to attempt to make beneficial changes in our society so that all people could benefit from them? It's not happening. So it gets back to what we can do as communities. We have to, my phrase was, reclaim community, reclaim our and rebuild our communities. This is something that we have to do. We have to do it. Because in the end, I think it would be far more beneficial than government services, even. Like right now, we are soon to experience the wrath of a storm. All right. People, and you said it, people are beginning to be very uneasy. I go out. Normally, the expectation is you go to get some water, you will get some water. But what happens when the water isn't there? It is not likely that you would have people saying, hey, I live next door to you. I have 6 gallons, you can have 2. This is not what happens in a situation where people feel panic and they begin to think in terms of their own lives. What's going to happen to them? They don't have time to worry about other people. And we are approaching that point where in the United States, which has long had a history of people helping each other, because just about everywhere you turn, there's chaos and there's anxiety, you also have an absence of people caring about each other. So you, in effect, you don't have any communities anymore. You don't. I live in a community. And in the last storm, I must have gotten about 4 or 5 people knocking on my door asking, are you okay? You have water, you know, that kind of stuff. Nothing so far this year.
Mm.
It means that people are responding to different kinds of pressures. And the number one pressure is survival. They don't have time to worry about you. So I sense that. I sense that. I saw it yesterday. And I noted it. Because it is precisely in those moments that you get people asking you those kinds of questions, you know, especially if you live in a community. You expect that. It shouldn't be so unusual, but nobody has asked so far. Not at all. Thanks, E, for calling in. And good luck. Hunker down and be safe. Now, that's an interesting thing. I came from Trinidad, as you know, I talk about it all the time. It is incomprehensible to me that people would live like that. Not reaching out to somebody, and I'm not saying that this is who they truly are, okay? I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that people are responding to pressures. And we don't know most of the time what those pressures are. But they're responding. They have to do something. And the more desperate they get, the more isolated they feel, the more reclusive they become. They're not involved. You can't build a community that way. When I was growing up, especially on Sundays, you saw it every day, but especially on Sundays, my mother, after our Sunday meal, the main lunch, would make ice cream. And we never got ice cream until about the fourth pail that she would make, all right? This is an 8-quart pail. And it would go about 4 rounds before we get our ice cream, because the neighbors have to have ice cream. They have children. And the neighbors have to have ice cream. So they will get the first few quarts that were made. In turn, we will have our Chinese neighbor would make bao. We would have all kinds of delicacies. And that was community. And we felt good about it. We liked it. That no longer exists. Well, it's time to say goodbye and have yourselves a good weekend. And meet up again on Monday. No, Mondays we're not on. Okay.